2017 was an amazing year in the Capitol. The state budget was late, highway funding is unresolved. Foxconn, though, got passed, the biggest handout to a business in the nation's history, and hashtag Me Too, so it's time for a year-end interview with Senate Democratic Leader, Senator Jennifer Schilling. Thank you very much.
Yes, welcome.
Well, two big issues this year, budget, Foxconn, where do you want to start?
Well, they melded together in that same week of September, and we saw a dysfunctional budget process play out early on, that there were contentious remarks amongst the Republican leaders, I think in February when the budget was rolled out from the governor, about a lackluster transportation plan that he put forward. And it was a long summer. It was hurry up and wait. It was 3 months late. Suddenly we get wind of a Foxconn deal being unveiled in the White House with President Trump and Speaker Ryan and others, and that kind of bookend that week in September of a Foxconn vote and a budget vote, and I think both were unpopular statewide.
Do both those issues help your party in the 2018 election, Senator?
I think they do. It helps the narrative of the majority party, A, being unable to govern, not able to tackle the tough issues like a long-term responsible transportation plan. I think it also demonstrates being out of touch with Wisconsin about the needs that families have for long-term job growth in this state, and really putting all Republicans put all their eggs in one basket of Foxconn, $3 billion, 25-year payout, and I think it's wildly unpopular outstate.
What type of a transportation funding plan long-term could Democrats like you have supported, Senator?
You know, and I think we could. I think the legislature could have gotten something accomplished that we all could feel good about heading into the future. But really, the biggest obstacle was Governor Walker and his veto pen and the threat of a veto. I think early on there were members in the assembly, both in the Republican and the Democratic Party, that wanted to do the right thing and wanted to find a resolution. Unfortunately, Senate Republicans backed Governor Walker the whole way, and it made it hard to be creative, think outside the box, float ideas without the governor leveling his veto pen and threatening that. And so I think there was that sense of paralysis to continue to bond, to kick the can down the road, delay projects is what the governor has advocated and signed off on.
But you've heard the governor say, look, that budget increased spending dramatically for K-12. And it continued the tuition freeze, and it eliminated a state-levied property tax. So we're going to hear that a great deal in the next election year, the response of you and Democrats?
Well, on the education front, the governor, I think, has been very misleading with the public that we are not back to where we were pre-Walker levels of funding education after his $800 million cut to our public schools and technical colleges and universities. So I think he's very misleading on this, that more and more communities still have to go to referendum to rely on local support for it. And I think it's disingenuous that just weeks after that the Republicans signed off and voted for that budget, we have some Republican legislators introducing legislation to a deal with the sparsity aid. And there had been a cut in rural schools. And at a time that those legislators could have stepped up and voiced their concerns and advocated for changes, they opted not to, and then finding legislation just weeks after to be introduced that really will go nowhere.
Let's talk about Foxconn. If a year from now, Foxconn is indeed building a major assembly plant and has hired, I don't know, 500 to 1,000 people. Will you Democrats be a political risk for voting against it, Senator?
I think even a year is too early to measure the success of or failure of Foxconn. I think as you look at the tax credits that are owed to them, it'll be a flat-out check to that company, taxpayer money to Foxconn. That a year is too early, and still it puts tremendous pressure on the other responsibilities in a $76 billion budget that we had this year. It was the largest budget in state history, and we still couldn't fund health care. We couldn't raise Medicaid reimbursement rates. We couldn't fund our roads for safe infrastructure of our roads and bridges. The list goes on and on of the failings that, because we have now put ourselves out there and being responsible on the Foxconn, that the Republicans have been so far out over their skis on this one that it will come back and it will definitely have ramifications on other priorities in the budget.
If a Democrat is elected governor, what advice would you give she or he in terms of Foxconn going forward, Senator?
I would give them the advice to review the contract carefully and to look for ways to look at transparency and accountability and stronger language of clawbacks that that could be instituted, and concerns that if this does not materialize to the growth in the size that has been promised, how do we recapture that investment on behalf of the taxpayers?
The governor has gone around the state saying that Foxconn will be good for all businesses when they get in the supply chain. What are you hearing from businesses in your regions? Are they hopeful that there would be some residual benefit from the Foxconn invest, any Foxconn investment in Wisconsin to them?
It's still unclear exactly what that benefit could be for them. And I will acknowledge in southeast Wisconsin that there can that there will be or can be some residual contracts. Some have said that because of businesses that will have contracts that they have and they will be moving towards Foxconn, other opportunities may open up because businesses will be tied to Foxconn. It is still wildly unpopular outstate, and people just don't feel that we knew enough about the company, that there were enough protections put in place, the idea of environmental changes and risks to benefit this company, and then changing legal standing and changing legal recourse and process for this company should it go to court, that it just felt like it was not a deal on behalf of the taxpayers that everybody could lift up and say that this is going to benefit the whole state. This is something that I think the governor, desperate for job numbers, that this was a last-ditch effort.
If the governor campaign's saying, you need to reelect me to get Foxconn to invest up to $10 billion, hiring thousands, what's going to be your party's response to that argument?
Again, the idea of up to 13,000 people working there, I think people recognize that in manufacturing and advanced manufacturing, a lot of automation is already taking place. So to think that we're going to have that many live bodies in a plant, I think, is just not realistic. I think looking at ways that, local government and the responsibilities that are being placed on them, the weight of many of these responsibilities for mm-hmm. infrastructure mm-hmm. will cause a strain. I think as we look at other ways that we continue to diversify small business and a portfolio of jobs in this state and manufacturing, that many feel left out and left behind in this, in the manufacturing, that where was their deal? Where was their small piece of a package like this to help already homegrown bricks and mortar businesses and small business owners in this state?
The wave of sexual harassment and sexual misconduct that has cost a lot of very high profile people their jobs. Is that how good a discussion for the country is that, Senator?
I think it is a discussion that is long overdue. I think as I talk to audiences about what is happening in the legislature, but in workplaces across the state, I see the nodding of heads of many women, that they can identify, they understand that this has been going on for far too long. And so as we in the legislature, just like TV studios, kitchens, manufacturers, restaurants across this country, we are all grappling with this, that has really been really shaken the foundation, I think, of the workplace and what is acceptable, and it is exposing a culture that has been wrong for too long.
Will it help you recruit more women to run for public office, Senator?
I certainly believe that many women are energized by this. I think the fact, going back to November 2016 and the election of Donald Trump and the emergence of many women stepping forward and becoming engaged in political activity, having never gone to rallies before or fundraisers for candidates, deciding that they too want to run for office and how to get trained with the skills and tools needed to be successful. And we've seen a large number of women running, wanting to run for office and get trained through our program of Emerge to help elect Democratic women from school board to governor to Congress. And so we definitely have seen enthusiasm for women as they look at wanting to have their voice heard and to be at that policy table. That if you're not in the room, they talk about you. When you're in the room, they talk to you. And I think that that message is being heard loud and clear.
The national backdrop of sexual harassment, then, what's at stake in today's election, U.S. Senate election in Alabama?
What's at stake with today's election? I think that it certainly is an important message about, you know, I am hopeful that the Democrat will be elected there and we can repudiate behavior such as this, that there is just not an acceptance, especially, well, in any workplace, but even members of the U.S. Senate are grappling if the Republicans should win. What kind of accountability investigations does that bring to the Senate? And looking at the reputation of the institution and what that represents to all Americans.
You're a veteran of the Capitol. How big of an issue do you think sexual harassment has been to date in this building?
As we look forward, we are taking corrective action, looking at our employee handbook. We hired a new HR person earlier this year, asked her to look and review the handbook to look at where we are maybe weak or outdated, or we've got processes that are not quite complete or need to be better articulated, looking at sort of standardization of corrective action. And so, yes, there has been a problem here in the legislature. And we want to make sure that this is a workplace that is safe for men and women. It is respectful for men and women, but definitely more women have these stories. And we want it to be a safe place for them to come forward without retribution and to recognize that in, you know, the HR department of NBC did not come out against Matt Lauer. It wasn't the HR department of Minnesota Public Radio that came out against Garrison Keillor. I mean, the list goes on and on. The HR department of the U.S. Senate against Al Franken. It is women feeling that they have the support and the environment to come forward and have their stories told and to have those perpetrators held accountable.
Representative Zebnick has said he's sorry for his conduct while he was abusing alcohol. He said he's been sober for 2 years. Why have you still called on him to resign?
I've worked to raise the bar in the code of conduct and to professionalize the legislature. In the assembly, and definitely working with the four leaders together about what is that training, what is that briefing that is needed, what is the environment that we have here, how do we work with HR for corrective action. That code of conduct and following along with my Democratic colleagues, along with many of in leadership, but also in that caucus, for him to resign, I think is appropriate.
Now, let's turn to 2018 and the elections. How are you coming and lining up potential candidates? Your odds of taking over the Senate in January of 19?
Well, we are excited. Our Senate Democratic team is excited with the number of candidates that we've been meeting with and potential candidates throughout this year, sometimes earlier than before in some of these districts. Now, the caveat is people are really watching the U.S. Supreme Court to see what happens on the unconstitutional maps that have been drawn and people have run under for the last several election cycles. But we are excited. There is an energy out there. We are seeing it in other states that have held elections this year in special elections, Virginia, Oklahoma, New Jersey. I mean, the list goes on and on about Democratic victories, that they are flipping seats that had been red and turning them to Democratic seats. I think part of it is a repudiation about a Trump administration and Trump agenda. And so we want to make sure that we in Wisconsin can capitalize and be part of that blue Democratic wave.
The lawyers that are advising you on the redistricting lawsuit, which the U.S. Supreme Court will decide, are they telling you that new boundary lines might conceivably have to be drawn by the 2018 election, Senator?
I want to remain cautiously optimistic on this and recognizing that I am sure that you can put in any kind of equation or numerical numbers into a redistricting program and have a map generated within a short amount of time. I am sure that the majority party has a map all ready to go, depending on what the timeline is, what the structure needs to be, or the requirements of it. And I'm also confident that on our side we are being prepared and drawing, looking to see a map that we would find to be fair as well. And so as we look at that, we look at the calculations that are being made. I am not under any sort of illusion that they will be a 50-50 map, that the Republicans are in power. They are in the majority. Their job is to keep the power, keep the majority. And I am under no false pretenses that the map will still favor Republican power, but to look to see if there are opportunities for pickups for Democrats to try to level it to some degree so that we have opportunities as well to win.
If the U.S. Supreme Court threw out the current boundary lines, is your party ready to come in the next day with proposed new boundary lines that would meet any standard set by the court?
Yes, I grew up as a Girl Scout, and I know being a Boy Scout is always be prepared. And so I am a planner, I am a list maker, I am a doer. I like to look around the corner and I'll look around to look ahead to see what could possibly be before us. And so, yes, working with our team, we have been doing what we need to do to be successful and to be ready should that decision come, and we have an opportunity for the map and for input.
Have you had a chance to read the Department of Justice report last week on the GAB and the John Doe 1, 2, and 3? If so, I'm curious about your reaction.
I have not read all of it, no. I have read the news accounts.
Okay. There are 16 registered Democrats running for governor. Tell me how your party wins when it could potentially split 8, 9, 10 different ways.
You know, I like all of them, and all of their kids are good looking. So as the year we turn to 2018 and the strength of these campaigns will become clearer, the focus will become clearer, that the infrastructure, the people, the troops on the ground, the resources that they have, the message that they are out there will all sharpen. And so I, like the rest of Wisconsin, wait with bated breath on the clarity and the strength of these campaigns.
Is it good to have 16, 11 months out?
Honestly, I think it's a little tough. It's a little distracting. I think any of this talk about campaign 2018 in December of 2017, that real people who work outside of the Capitol are not paying attention, right? They are all busy with their lives of raising their family, taking care of aging parents, making sure that, you know, their day-to-day needs are met. And so I know that, and many of them are good friends of mine that are running, and it's hard to cut through the static of life 12, 14 months out from the election, but give it time and people will start to pay attention.
Governor Walker, based on his past ability to raise money, may spend 25 or 35 million. Your candidate may be badly outspent. How great of an impact will that play in the decision who's our next governor?
You know, I think there comes a point that the voters are fatigued with the gross amount of money that they see in campaigns, and there has to be a saturation point at some point of these television ads and radio ads that they are hearing already 14 months out from the election. The people just tune it out. And honestly, I've spent some time with friends that don't subscribe to magazines. They don't subscribe to newspapers. They get their news through their phone, and it's a selective, narrow, selective kind of choice that they have to be updated on current affairs. And so I think that is a challenge that both parties have in just today's age of trying to get your message out and connect with voters. But I think at a time that I think the governor's number should be higher for approval rating, and I don't think he has really bounced back from his 90 days of presidential run, voters aren't quite convinced that he is still looking out for them and their family's interests.
Final question. Lawmakers are only going to be in session a few weeks next year. What's your top priority for the few days that we're going to be in session?
Well, it's one of the top priorities that we have had as Wisconsin Democrats since we came in to this legislative year in 2017, working with our counterparts, the Democrats in the Assembly, about our Wisconsin way forward, our agenda about helping to grow middle-class families. It's talking about refinancing student loan debt. It's talking about tax credits for families for child care expenses. It's talking about flexibility for family medical leave. It's looking at long-term pension and retirement security and access to that. These are the issues, kind of those bread and butter issues of health care and education, that people look to us to be problem solvers. We have failed, the governor. The majority party has failed on transportation, that we have not put forward a long-term responsible plan into the next year. And that's one of my regrets. I found like a broken record from last session that was one of my regrets, that we weren't able to come up with that. So I think there is fatigue from voters that those in the majority take the political easy way out on some of these areas of delaying projects, borrowing more, rather than really buckling down, finding that intestinal fortitude, that backbone to make the tough decisions and to move forward.
Senate Democratic Leader Jennifer Schiller, thank you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to your family.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you very much.